I just felt like it was a little bit of a kick in the balls, to be honest.
It came a lot sooner than I thought that I would be the oldest player on the team.
That's all you got, brother. That's all you got.
The word of the day would have been hyper-realism.
We're bad at soccer, but we're good on a bagel.
Holding the high line with Rabbi and Red, talking the rapids and turning heads, with questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home, thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Hello, Colorado Rapids fans. You are listening to Holding the High Line with Rabbi and Red. My name is Matt Pollard. It is Tuesday, May 28th, 2024. Happy belated Memorial Day, especially to any service men, women, and people who are listening to the show. Vancouver fans took an expensive L despite no Lionel Messi over the weekend. Marco Reus and Dortmund have a date with their past demons and Real Madrid in London. Moise Bombito and Jesse Marsh are getting to vibe off of each other soon enough. And Kevin Cabral brought La Revolucion to get the Pids a point against the Loons. Joining me now, a man who was once as blonde as Ricky Pooj was this weekend, Rabbi Mark Goodman.
Hey, Matt, how's it going?
I'm good. I'm busy. How are you, Mark? How's the weather? It's summer vibes are officially here in the Front Range.
It got hot and then it cooled off today and I spent the day, today's my day off. I was working on my deck. Some guy quoted us that it would cost $20,000 to fix our deck. And I was like, I didn't actually want the deck repaired. He was actually supposed to put up a pergola. And I was like, I can fix this. So I just looked at a couple of YouTube videos and it was nice and cool. And the demo was harder than the putting new deck in. And I feel very, very proud of myself because I used a circular saw for 2 days and didn't cut off any fingers and toes. So yay me. But the weather's nice. It's a little bit of drizzle, hick. He says while drinking a beer, a little bit of drizzle every day. It was really hot for like 4 or 5 days, and now it's nice and cool. How about you in Colorado?
Went on my first proper hike, I would say, outside of the Front Range. I went to a nice little spot in Evergreen that I will not be revealing where it is because I'm gatekeeping my good hiking spots, listeners. So ramping up for that, Mark, and I've done a really good job with leg day and like ramping up going back to like last ski season. So like ski season, 2 ski seasons ago, as of just now, and then that ramping up into all the 14ers that I did last summer, and then that making it easy to transition to the ski season that's about to end. So I need to find one of the more difficult 14ers for me to do, because like I've conquered all the ones that are decent day trips, Mark. So maybe I take like a 3-day weekend and find a buddy and we go camping and like we do like the Maroon Bells or something. So I'm conquering the mountains mostly as a form of me avoiding weekend adulting, and the Colorado Rapids are also contributing to that positively as well. Mark, kids out of school officially? What's the summer plan? Sleepaway camp, maybe?
Yeah, so they started going to a sleepaway camp last summer. They go to a couple of like enrichment-y kind of day camps. I think they're doing an activity like fitness camp, which they went to last year. My wife signed them up for them, and that was like, that doesn't sound like my kids. That doesn't sound like it's going to be successful. And they went and they had a great time, and I was so confused. And then we have 1 week, which I call Camp Abba. Abba is Hebrew for father. And that's just like I do stuff with them. And in the past, that would be often we would go camping. And the kids hate camping. They don't like bugs. They don't like dirt. They don't like cooking low-end food. They don't like anything about camping with me. So we're not going camping anymore. And from now on, Camp Abba is now like a day trip to a city that is not so far from Pittsburgh. And so I gave Iggy the choice, and we did some research between Detroit and Cleveland, and we decided to go to Cleveland. So we're going on a vacation to Cleveland, which, I mean, you stay in it. Okay, so Matt thinks it's hysterical. So first of all, there are 3 reasons to go to Cleveland. Number one, it's 2 hours away, so it's not very far, and the kids don't like long drives. Two, hotels are great. And anywhere you stay in a hotel with your kids is honestly a vacation. They love the hotel. And three, and the most important thing, and the thing that Iggy went for, because they're not really interested in museums either. They want to eat. And so there is a kosher Kansas City style barbecue place in Cleveland called Mendel's Casey Barbecue. And so that is the selling point. So we're driving and staying over and having barbecue, kosher barbecue, like, you know, big ass beef ribs in Cleveland. So that's our big thing. We're also going to be in Los Angeles in about 2 weeks. So that's our other big trip. And the plan is, I think my dad bought the tickets. Me and Iggy and my dad, three generations of Goodman men, will be at the Diggity to go see LA Galaxy play Kansas City in a football match. So that should be fun. I get to see Ricky Pooj and Gabriel Peck and everybody else in good times. So it's vacations shaping up. And the kids at the end of the summer go to sleepaway camp in Maryland. So.
Okay, so a few things there, Mark. First of all, as the son of a Michigander, you choosing Cleveland over Detroit is like that the meme, the fake Cleveland Tourism Board song of like the "Come on down to Cleveland now, everyone," and the song ends with "At least we're not Detroit." So you have your children have validated that in terms of which city they're going to. I understand not interested in museums, Mark, but Rabbi, as a musical person, I feel like you are failing your children by saying, let's go to Cleveland and not hyping up the Rock and Roll Hall of
Fame. We talked about it. They don't care. Boo. I mean, and also, honestly, think about who's been let into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in the last like 20 years and ask if my kids have heard of or care about any of those people. That's the problem. Like, they're just not. They're not into it. So,
okay,
I don't know.
Give it 5 years and Taylor Swift is going to be a first ballot music Hall of Fame everything. I don't know that she counts as rock and roll.
Edda
She's done at
like,
least one.
Edda likes Billie Eilish and Iggy likes, I don't know what music Iggy likes. Iggy likes really strange, he has very strange. He likes Bhangra. He likes kind of classical music. He likes Soviet marches. He's a very interesting child, my kid.
I don't have time to unpack this, Mark. So we're gonna move on to the Vancouver Messi drama. So listeners, this past weekend, Vancouver Whitecaps, who played the Rapids recently, are playing the Rapids this Saturday, hosted Inter Miami. It was one of the few trips that Inter Miami has for an away game to a Western Conference team. And it was announced like 2 days beforehand that Vancouver came out with a press release saying that Messi wasn't going to be playing and he wasn't even going to be making the trip. A few other players also weren't going to be available. Spoiler
Busquets.
Alert.
And Suarez.
And
yeah.
Suarez. I don't know if Alba played or not. I didn't watch that. I didn't watch it. I saw that the final score was 2-1 Inter Miami and surprised Miami's capable of getting results against good teams on the road in MLS, despite not having all of their stars. And there's been a lot of hoopla about this, Mark. There's a change.org or a petition out of like demanding a refund and like better transparency. There was a meme that was posted of a Vancouver Whitecaps fan holding a sign. I'll show it up to you, Mark, since you haven't seen it. I'll post this in the show notes as well, listeners. Flights $1,000, hotel $1,700, dinner $800. I have to assume these are Canadian dollars. Two tickets $1,400, no Messi, priceless. And the two S's at the end of priceless are dollar signs. And there's also a thumbs down emoji on here as well.
That's a great poster, except it's referencing a Visa commercial from like 15 years ago. So, like,
yeah.
We don't like young people don't even remember that ad anymore. But it's still the point stands.
So, Mark, beside the fact that I get it, Vancouver's expensive. I get it. This is the Canadian dollar. I haven't looked at that conversion rate recently, but I feel like there's no way that $800 Canadian is more than like $500, $600 US at this point. So to this particular fan, Mark, who's going and getting two tickets, so presumably him and his kid, him and his wife, maybe, you know, you're talking about dropping $250, $300 US knee. Like, are you going to a Michelin star restaurant in downtown Vancouver? Were you getting foie gras? Like, old man, go get yourself some scran is first of all my comment. Like, I got two tacos and an arepa, you know, before I went to go see Messi in Miami for like $25. And that was me tipping the little Cuban lady running the stand very, very well by my standards. So, Mark, this highlights the greater theme that we've talked about on this show, but now is, you know, come to the forefront with what happened with Vancouver, which is that MLS still has an issue around the monetization of Messi, about teams in the league making it Messi League Soccer, that being an issue, them upcharging their fans. Some people could call it a cash grab. And really, some of these away games, if you look at the New England Revolution game a few years ago, or a few weeks ago, where they sold out Gillette Stadium and had a record crowd for a Revs home game. And, you know, and Don Garber posted, you know, best fans of the league or best fans in world football. And all of the comments were just people saying, like, no, it's Bostonian and New Yorker Messi fans who are the reason that Gillette got sold out. Mark, are effectively turning some of Messi's away games in MLS into competitive testimonials. And this is still an issue that's present. And in a weird way, I'm kind of glad we don't have to deal with this circus here at Dick's Sporting Goods Park. And I feel pretty confident with Messi's last year under contract in Miami being next year. I feel pretty confident the last MLS stadium that Messi will ever be coming to for a scheduled regular season game will be Dick's Sporting Goods Park. And there's a part of me that's kind of relieved that I got that bucket list by going to see him away against the Rapids, and the Rapids got a result. And now I can think about other things other than it being Messi League Soccer.
You want me to comment?
Sure.
Sure. I don't have a lot of strong feelings. I actually am. I guess I'm resigned to the fact that major stars aren't going to play all the games. And they're definitely not going to play all the away games, and they're definitely not going to play on turf if they can avoid it. So I wasn't surprised that Messi didn't play this game. I also think that for fans who... I also expected the season to go exactly the way it has, which is that there are a lot of... The reference point for those who want to read it is... The Beckham Experiment by Grant Wall, which is a great book that I read a couple of years ago and still have on the shelf. And Beckham played through injury at the very beginning of his time with the Galaxy, and it was very difficult. And he missed a couple games, or he came on late, or he didn't play at all. And fans were really upset because people packed, you know, stadiums that they had rented, NFL stadiums for the occasion, and then Beckham either only played a few minutes or played hurt or didn't play at all. And so this is not new, and it's not unexpected, and I honestly don't really sympathize that much with traveling fans, right? If you got on a plane and went to Vancouver and Messi didn't play, or if you got on a plane and you went to Miami and Messi didn't play, that's part of the deal. Like, that's to be expected. You just don't know who's going to be in the lineup from night to night. And it's a long season and not everybody can play. You know, there was a time a couple of years ago when my buddy, who's from Cleveland, making a big appearance in this show this week. He really wanted to go see Golden State versus the Cleveland Cavaliers when Cleveland had LeBron James. And it was at the very beginning of the Steph Curry era. So this is like more than 10, like 12 years ago. And we went and we got tickets, and it was amazing. You know, we got to go see LeBron James play Steph Curry. And that's pretty much one of the highlights of any NBA, you know, experience. But you know, going into the arena, that like, what if LeBron pulls a hammy in pregame, and like, you're gonna miss out. You're still at an NBA game. You know, you're still you still are seeing something really remarkable and amazing. And you know, I don't get out to a ton of professional sporting events other than Major League Soccer. I put all my eggs in that basket, and so I kind of get it. But you know, like, this is the deal. And sporting events cost a lot of money, and but no dinner costs $800. So I don't know what the hell these people were smoking.
Yeah, and this just further highlights, Mark, that given the significance, given the clear bump in attendance and media interest locally in casual fans And in the amount of money that these clubs were able to generate by Messi coming here, I think this speaks to that still the floor of where MLS is at needs to be raised. And the fact that Messi can raise that level shows that he's also an incredible star, but, you know, still the league's still working to stand on its own two feet. And that's not necessarily in line with some of the PR spin that we get from people at Apple or from Don Garber or other people around the league. Mark, other big news, the biggest game in world football this weekend is not Colorado Rapids at Vancouver Whitecaps. It is the Champions League final, which will be at Wembley Stadium in London. BVB Dortmund taking on Real Madrid. Marco Reus in his final game with Dortmund. And Mark, there's been some rumblings. I think it's Charlotte and then St. Louis, I think, are supposedly in the rumblings for Marco Reus, where he's going after his career now ends with Dortmund as well. And so, Mark, we have the inevitable juggernaut that is Real Madrid in the competition that is absolutely theirs. You have Dortmund exceeding their expectations in terms of getting into Champions League, as I knock down my water bottle off mic. And you've got the narrative around Marco Reus, who kind of, I was listening to European Nights from Men in Blazers earlier today, Rabbi, and they were saying that it's like the Marco Reus is special in Dortmund, not necessarily because he won, but because of the player that he was, and because he's so beloved, and because also he never left. Like, nobody stays at Dortmund. He's the guy who stayed at Dortmund. And that, and the, like, the feeling of, like, being happy and being fulfilled and being the club guy has maybe for him overcome the lack of trophies. He never won the Bundesliga. He's won a couple German cups. He was injured for 2014 and lost out on playing for Germany in the World Cup, the only major trophy that they've won during Das Reboot. Ironically, Mark, I believe the reporting at the time would have been the spot was his, and he lost out to Mario Götze, who scored the winning goal against Argentina in extra time of that final. So parallels there, certainly. And so we have the inevitable machine that is Real Madrid, Mark, against the, like, Hollywood ending for Marco Reus, and whether or not they can, Dortmund can finally overcome their Dortmundness in winning a major trophy, and the fact that it is against the inevitable juggernaut that is Real Madrid, and also them going back to London, where a decade ago they played Bayern Munich and fumbled the bag again to lose out to a major trophy to them. All the narratives and stuff, Mark, I'm rooting so hard. Every single neutral has to be rooting for Dortmund, has to be rooting for Marco Reus to score a winner or score the winning penalty or what have you. But at the same time, this is Madrid, and I've seen this story before.
Yeah, I mean, this is not the final that I was expecting or the final that I was rooting for. I mean, I think a lot of people, you know, it couldn't have been Bayern Leverkusen who won the Bundesliga because they weren't in the Champions League at all. It could have been Bayern Munich, but they kind of had a down year. It would have made sense if Arsenal had gone a little further. But Real Madrid have put together a really good season and have played very, very well, both in La Liga and in Champions League. I've watched a couple of their Champions League matches, and, you know, this is a very talented Real Madrid team that I'm going to be pulling for, I guess. Vinicius Jr. is amazing. Jude Bellingham has been pretty remarkable on the year and has just pumped in a ton of assists. Toni Kroos is apparently retiring off of this and not moving on to continue, you know, with Cash Grab FC, you know, milking two more years by playing in MLS or Saudi Arabia, which is what I would do if I were him. And Thibaut Courtois is still back there manning the pipe. So this is a very exciting team to watch. And I think I actually haven't gotten to see Jude Bellingham play much because he was hurt a bunch of the season when I was getting to watch them play. So I'll be pulling for Real Madrid. These games tend to be not quite as exciting as the semifinals leading up to them, but, you know, Dortmund have played a very tough schedule to get to this point, including beating Kylian Mbappe's PSG on the way there. So it's been a good ride, and we'll see where things kind of end up for this match. Usually I kind of root for the German team over the Spanish team, but this Spanish team, just because Vinicius is so fun to watch when he's really on it, that's who I'm pulling for in this match.
Mark, let's talk about the Rapids. So this past Saturday, the Pits got a 3-3 draw against Minnesota United. Kind of a game of two halves, if you will, Mark, or a game of moments. Vancouver. I'm going to mix up the Loons and the Caps so many times in this episode, and I apologize in advance of this. Mark, Vancouver had 9 shots in total. They had 6 on goal. 4 of
Matt,
those...
you did it again. It's not Vancouver, it's Minnesota.
Okay, I'm gonna say United, and I'm gonna say the Caps going forward. United had 9 shots in this game. 6 of them were on goal. 4 of them directly contributed to goals. 1 of them was a save that Stefan made, and then the rebound got put in. They had 4 shots in the first half on basically 3 attacking sequences, all of which led to goals. Just some really good direct attacking play off of turnovers in midfield, 1 against the Rapids rest defense. And this is the first time, Rabbi, that I really feel the up the middle, the Rapids were just absolute Swiss cheese in a way that kind of triggered me going and gave me memories of last year that was really disappointing. But the Rapids fight back. Kevin Cabral scores on a similar play to how Zhang Sangbin scored his brace in the 8th and the 33rd minute. Kevin Cabral scores in the 18th off of a United United goal kick that then gets double headed forward, and Cabral finally does the thing that we've been waiting him to do, where he's able to separate from a defender, get in on a breakaway, and normally he shoots either wide or directly into the goalkeeper, and he ends up chipping Dane St. Clair. He gets his brace off of kind of a back to goal header that St. Clair butterfingers a little bit lucky, but you make your own luck. And then Navajo had similarly a fantastic back to goal header on a corner in the 62nd minute from Georgi Mihailovic that he put in. Still not sure, Mark. I haven't seen a convincing angle that shows that Moise Bombito or the other Rapids player at the back post didn't get a touch to it, but they're giving it to Navajo. So we'll continue that narrative rather than saying it was Moise on a free kick. It was Navajo on a corner, and that's now his 5th goal in 5 straight Rapids games. The only other Rapids player to ever do that was Omar Cummings, who did that in 2010, but then Navajo also missed a penalty that Omer Fernandez ended up drawing later on in the second half. So kind of a mixed bag from Hoffa, but, you know, one spectacular finish. He was going to miss a penalty eventually. 4 out of 5 is still decent, albeit, I think that's right even. I think the XG that they're giving on pens these days is like 0.79 or just over 8. So, you know, 4 out of 5, 8 out of 10 is about even. So that's kind of the rundown. There was a lot of goals that happened, and then kind of some back and forth in the final 20 minutes for me. Calvin Harris missed that header on a free kick, you know, to end the game. Timo Pukki got in behind Zach Steffen and had a sharp angle shot that he could have put in, but ends up putting it on the outside of the far post. That could have been a goal to win the game. So crazy game, Mark. Crazy start to it. The Rapids battle back, make some adjustments. Chris Armas actually came out to the team talk on the field near midfield at halftime. I've never seen a Rapids coach do that before, but that's something that is emblematic of Chris's energy and wanting to be present in some of these moments that I do think was a net positive for the team in what they did in the second half. So I think overall a fair result, albeit a wonky game, Mark, and MLS After Dark going to MLS After Dark. Rabbi, where would you like to start with this match?
I mean, this game was bonkers. This is weird that the Rapids would have 2 high scoring, crazy affairs 1 week after another. That's the big thing is that
3 out of 4 games, too, if we're just excluding the Vancouver game. RSL, and then this one.
That's right. And I think there's a degree to which I'm worried about all that because, you know, I'm used to a Colorado Rapids team under Pablo Mastroeni that was like, we are going to win 1-0, or we are going to, you know, win, or we're going to draw 1-1, but we're never going to concede 3 goals. That's not a thing for us. And then under Anthony Hudson, there was a bunch of kind of resetting. And then under Robin Fraser is a little more kind of fluid. And now we've got Chris Armas. And, you know, the bill of goods I've been sold on Chris Armas is that he's a high press guy and he's going to create goals through defense. And that to me means you're going to be very defensive and you're going to work on defense a lot and your team is going to be good at defense. And, you know, if you take San Jose and Colorado, if you take the San Jose game and the Minnesota game and the Real Salt Lake game together, the Rapids have conceded 11 goals in three games, you know? We're leaving aside the Vancouver game, which was 1-0, because that was such a snoozer. But, like, that's crazy. I think one of the things that we'd seen with the 4-2-3-1, generally when you see a 4-2-3-1, it's hard to play through because you have three midfielders, because you have a double pivot defensive line that's shielding your back line. On top of that, the Rapids have been starting Andreas Maxo, who's a very dependable, solid center back, and then Bombito, who can, you know, accelerate and get to anything. My guess was that this was a capable defense that was going to be able to clamp down and be one of the better defenses in the league. That's not what's going on right now, and I don't really know what's going on, and I don't really have... I mean, I think there was narrative about this team, which was they were overperforming expected goals, but they were also a very high-achieving team, and they were able to score in multiple ways. They were able to press and force turnovers. They were able to play with speed. They were able to go route one, and they could also build and create through movement and passing. This was a team that had a number of attacks. And all of a sudden, we aren't that anymore. We're a team that scores goals a lot, but we don't defend to save our lives. The other thing I'll say is this. There's no bad thing, big thing, good thing. I'll say two more things really quickly, and then I'll turn it back to you, Matt, which is one is that this team really very much seems like they are pressing very high. And there was a tweet that I put out where I took a screenshot where the Rapids had turned over the ball in a bad spot. But the defensive line had come all the way up beyond the halfway point. And United broke on us and just rammed it down our throats really, really quickly. And there was nothing to do about that. And then the second thing is I also noted that Ali Larraz had a pretty bad game first half. He had 72% passing, so like 24 for 36 or something like that. It was just not
halftime.
That was what I was going to say. Why would you steal that from my mouth, Matt? Why would you do that? No, I love it. No, you're kidding. No, the mind meld is complete with us. He got yanked at the half, and that's really, you know, it's very rare in professional soccer to get taken off the field at the half. And if you do, it's generally a very clear statement of what the coach thinks of your performance. So I don't know what's up. I don't know what that means. Ollie's had a couple of rough games. I don't know if that means that, you know, Connor Ronan is going to go and get his spot back, and that's that. Because remember also, Larraz was starting next to Connor Ronan, and Cole Bassett was playing more up front. Now maybe you leave Cole Bassett as a deep lying midfielder and you let him be the proper number eight. You let Mihailovic be the number 10, and you let Connor Ronan go back to being the true six. I like Ali Larraz. I think a little hiccup here now and again is normal. I also think it's very dangerous to mess with a young player's confidence by yanking him full time. But, you know, you got to win games, and that's it. You know, the manager picks the lineup that is the one that's going to win games. So I have the last thing I'll say is this. I guess this is the real big thing, which is I am starting to worry about this team. I do think I put this out on our Twitter and our Facebook, whether other people were worrying. And I would say 2/3 of fans said they were not worried, and 1/3 of fans said, I have real concerns. I think there's some real regression to the mean. I think the team has been overplaying a little bit, achieving better than normal. There were spots in this game where in the second half, I think the Rapids played better than their opponent, but Timu Pukki missing that really great chance at like 76. The Rapids could have lost this game. And also Rafael Navajo missing that PK, the Rapids could have won this game. So this was a draw that felt like a loss to me. Ultimately, they didn't play great in the first half. There were still defensive slip-ups in the second half. I'd like to see this team start to lock it down a little bit better.
Yeah, that reminds me, Mark, the two penalties that the Rapids have missed this season have both ended in draws, and we could be talking about Mihailovic converts his penalty. I believe they were up a man at that point at Seattle. We're talking about two wins instead of two draws, and what would that mean in the table and for the greater narrative of this team? You know, Mark, if we're talking about being down 3-1 at halftime to Minnesota United, you come back to win that game 4-3, and you combine that with your DP striker getting goal number 10 of the season and being 5-for-5 on penalties. Like, Mark, Navajo is, if he scores a goal a game, which is where he's at right now, on his recent form, like if he does that or a goal every other game until the end of his loan, which is at the end of next month, so at the end of June, 5 weeks away, like, Mark, he's playing his way into, for me, being worth that $4.5 million option. So forget the needing to negotiate or everything. At the point, like, he's playing to the point where that's now a bargain, and let's pour Smith Rapids math this into getting a net differential with that and maybe signing him to a bit of a lower number, though. Mark, we need to, this was like the reverse Kevin Cabral game, because Minnesota United played a back five and they scored two goals quickly. And then I made a joke with Connor Ronan post-game, Rabbi, where I said that Minnesota United had 11 and a half men behind the ball at times. And so there's no, you know, Cabral's value, even when he's not scoring, is in being able to progress the ball in transition and be played into space. And when there's absolutely no space because the opponent has a back five and then a flattened out midfield as well, like, you're forced to break down a low block. And then it becomes more about what a Cole Bassett or a Georgi Mihailovic doing. And so Cabral had one opportunity to do that, and he finally scored on it. And otherwise, he was effective in the chances that he had. A bit of a fortuitous bounce against Dane St. Clair. So if he could put those two things together of being clinical with a few chances that he gets and then do all the other stuff that I have praised him for or said that there's value because he had nothing in the final third, there's a player in there. Is he worth a DP slot and $1.8 million and all the gam that the Rapids gave up to LA Galaxy? Maybe not yet, but it's a start. If it leads to something more than to where Cabral can be a better version of himself in June and July, like how Navajo is a better version of himself than he was in March and April, then I'm here for it, and I'm not going to hate on the guy. Mark, we need to talk about the offsides on the second Minnesota United goal that was called offsides on the field, but then VAR got involved, and it looks really, really close. And I saw a few of the MLS referee, not official referees, but the MLS Twitter accounts that care about officiating, that care about officiating calls, care about VAR, saying that based on the best screenshot that we have, he's onside. I think it's really, really close. I think it's as close as the Keegan Rosenberry called off goal against NYCFC. And for those reasons, and the way that VAR normally has handled this with Pro and with MLS, of the language clear and obvious, I think both of those plays, if Cabral, who I think is onside, Mark, in the NYCFC game, is so close that it's too close to call, so its call stands, then I think you have to have that one stand. I think we have to call, who is it? I'm going to totally butcher this name. Tani Oluwaseye, who scored the second goal for Minnesota off of the Rosales shot that was rebounded to Stefan, but Oluwaseye was in an offside position at the time of the Rosales shot. I think you have to have that one stand. So it's really, really close. Officials have a really, really difficult job. This is, you know, fine margins. Ironically, Mark, I was asking for like the Premier League, you know, like the crudely drawn lines to try and get something. I think it's too close for comfort. If you're calling off, if you're saying call stands on Keegan Rosenberry's goal at City Field being called offsides, then I think you have to let the call on the field stand as well. Maybe there's an angle that we haven't seen yet publicly that'll come out with the Pro dispatches that they have later this week or early next week that'll be a little bit more conclusive. It's really, really tight. I trust the call on the field, just me. Mark, do we need to hammer Zach Steffen a little bit more? Because, you know, we're talking about a couple breakaway plays where he didn't really cut down the angle and got undone by Sanbing Jong. And also another play where he gives up a rebound that then is immediately just a tap in for an opponent. And we saw him do that twice against RSL, albeit one on a set piece. You know, and the stats aren't very kind to him. And Matt Doyle even finally brought it up of we're looking at William Yarbrough, Marco Ilicic level bad post-shot XG right now. And earlier on in the season, even when the greater numbers weren't good, the eye test of him making a big save that we wouldn't associate one of a Rapids goalkeeper making, that he's not making those right now. And that's coupled with your comments about how the Rapids defense is really leaky right now. And I don't know what's going on there. And Chris Sharpie's got some work to do before we get to Houston tomorrow night.
Yeah, I had some comments early in the season that he wasn't living up to where he was at, but the numbers were still kind of in the it's inconclusive stage, and now the numbers are not good. And I mean, when you spend big money on a goalkeeper, you need them to perform in a way that they're gonna be kind of value added above the average goalkeeper in Major League Soccer to a very significant amount. Because otherwise, you know, the replacement level goalkeeper in Major League Soccer is really, really cheap. You know, America produces lots of good goalkeepers. And I've always been in favor, and people have called me out on this, and I think they're all idiots and they're all wrong, but I've always been in favor of going down to USL and grabbing the best goalkeepers in USL for your team. And I think it's the cheapest and simplest way to fill holes in your team, and you're probably going to get pretty good production, especially if you've got like two kind of replacement level or USL level goalkeepers competing against each other. They're going to produce at about an average rate. Now, the counter argument to that is, this goes back to the days when Tim Howard was our goalkeeper, and Grant Wall did a great Grant Wall coming up a bunch in this podcast. It's Cleveland and it's Grant Wall. Grant Wall did a great podcast talking to someone in the metrics community about one of those kind of Moneyball numbers. You know, one of the things about Moneyball was that in the Billy Bean Moneyball era, they found out that on base percentage was the number that wasn't being utilized as much, and steals was dumb. What happened about 5-10 years later was Major League Baseball wasn't valuing steals enough, and you could get steals, guys who could steal bases at a cheaper rate because everyone had binged on OBP too much. And so Billy Bean went the other way and started getting guys who could steal bases. So the argument that can be made in Major League Soccer is, pound for pound, dollar for dollar, spend your DP money on a goalkeeper because they will keep goals out at a rate that is commensurate with a goal scorer, and that will be good for you. That only works if you spend big money on a goalkeeper and he keeps goals out. We spent big money on a goalkeeper and he's not keeping goals out. So it's the real problem.
Spent big money on two goalkeepers. One's not here and one's not keeping goals out. So on that note, Mark, just to point out, have you watched Philly at all? Because Oliver Samuniu is playing decently, and Jim Curtin's been really, really complimentary of him when Andre Blake's been out. So, and you look at how the Rapids handled that with drafting him, but then not retaining or even signing him, a little bit problematic. Last three things that I'm going to say here, Mark. Georgi Mihailovic, another game where he goes a little bit unnoticed from a possession standpoint. He did have he was taking set pieces, and he was dangerous on that. And he served in a great ball to Hoffa on the second goal that the Rapids scored. So, I mean, if Georgi Mihailovic, if the Rapids are going to be the set piece kings of MLS, and Georgi Mihailovic is effectively going to become the James Ward-Prowse of the Colorado Rapids, I'm okay with that if he's on TAM, not Mark, if he's the highest transfer fee in club history, and then also the highest paid player on the Rapids as well. He needs to play better. He made some comments post game, Mark. You know, he said, I asked him about that, and he said, you know, I can't pass the ball to myself. And, you know, he commented on it being frustrating. His body language continues to be something that I notice, Mark. I'm not ready to criticize it or say that it's all his fault. And I do think it's worth pointing out that he was the first person to high five Kevin Cabral on his breakaway goal. But then Georgie's the only field player who didn't go join the big hug fest that was with Chris Armas in the technical area around the Rapids goal after that. Last two things that I'll say, Mark, I'm working on an article separately on this, but the new Scran came out that the club was putting out, and this was in direct response to all of the stuff that they did this past offseason with the individual interviews, the season ticket holder town halls, which I reported on for Burgundy Wave, and then also the fan survey, which was available at the start of the year. This was a direct response to that. I'm doing a bigger article that's going to touch on that as well. General views I saw were positive, and season ticket members did get $20 credited to their account to try and try some of the stuff as well. And I have heard that the press box may be allowing us to taste test some of the stuff to get a good sense of it. So the photos looked good, Mark, the descriptions of what they had. You know, let me get the actual sheet that I have out here. So here's what supposedly was available here, folks. So we got Arctic cinnamon nachos, we got brisket, grilled cheese and chips, we got chicken fries, we've got chicken green chili mac and cheese, we got a chicken parm sandwich, which they sold out of at halftime. I think I heard somebody say that. They got a chopped Italian salad. They got more nachos. They got a hot Italian sub. And they got a spicy Italian sausage and chip. Not seeing a lot of kosher available options here, Rabbi. But, Mark, I feel like you and I could go to a game and we could get something at halftime that would hit the spot that wouldn't need to be Dippin' Dots.
Yeah, that is my one complaint, is that, like, as the – they're never going to have kosher meat at an event. But that means I have to be a vegetarian, and there aren't a lot of vegetarian options. But honestly, that all sounds really good. And like, I think I mentioned LAFC doing brisket nachos like 6 or 7 years ago and was just hankering for that. So good stuff. Big fan. You know, I think the only thing that old school Rapids fans, not even old school, like 3 or 4 years ago, would hope for is either GB's fish and chips coming back, or just do a fish and chips. We're kind of in the United States taking off of English soccer to some degree, so fish and chips and pies are a thing that we're all kind of up for. So those are my two cents. I would love more kind of options with hot pretzels too, but you know, that's something that I've kind of picked up here in Pittsburgh, that like the pretzel with the nacho cheese on it is a great addition to sporting events.
Yeah, and then on top of that, Mark, if we're talking about the original beloved Scran of at least my time covering the Colorado Rapids, it was, of course, the mini donuts that were also super, super close to the – when you go down the stairs from the press level onto the ground level to actually get into the stadium to go see someone in the stands or, like, go down to the field level as well, they were right there, so they were super close. So I could go – I could get GB's fish and chips before the games if I got there early, because I had to walk – all the way to the south side, but getting there and back in 15 minutes with, you know, at halftime when that concourse is absolutely crowded was not possible. I could get the mini donuts. I think we're okay with the mini donuts not coming back because they brought them to the tailgate as well. But so that was good to see. Mark, I did just notice in scrolling that apparently Greenland has applied to join CONCACAF, which would be weird and I'd be totally here for it. But we don't have time for that banter topic because, listeners, it is another double game week, as this coming Wednesday, so tomorrow at time of recording, you may be listening to this after this game, but in any case, Wednesday, May 29th, the Colorado Rapids are at Houston Dynamo, and then Saturday, June 1st, the Rapids are at Vancouver Whitecaps Minnesota United Loons FC, but so Mark, let's start with the standings of where these three teams are at. We won't spend a whole lot of time on Vancouver because Rapids fans have been refamiliarized with what they are as a squad, but the Pids, off of their draw against Minnesota, are now sitting sixth in the Western Conference, 22 points off of 15 games played and a positive goal difference, and they are 3-3-2 on the road, so the Rapids are still a decent road team. Houston Dynamo just behind the Rapids in eighth place in the West. They have 18 points off of 14 games played, so they do have a game in hand. -2 goal difference, and at home this season, they are 2-2-3. Vancouver Whitecaps sitting seventh in the Western Conference, Mark. So the Rapids are in sixth, they're in seventh, and Houston is in eighth. In any case, Vancouver, 9 points off of 14 games played, a goal difference of +3. And at BC Place, despite losing to Not Messy this past weekend, they are 2-3-2. So let's start with the Houston Dynamo, Mark, who got off to a bit of a slow start. They've been inconsistent. They were inconsistent last year. Granted, their inconsistencies last season were more they were a fantastic home team and then a mid road team. But this year has really been about them kind of figuring out with some of the inconsistencies of their young players, and then also Hector Herrera, who was hurt to start the season and was not available the last time these two teams played, that saw the Brad Smith winner in extra time off of that controversial no call. But Hector Herrera, Ace Ace, is back in midfield playing next to Artur. Coco Kereskia is up there. Amin Bassi is a player that I really like, Mark. And Latif Blessing did just score, I believe, his first goal for the club this past weekend at LA Galaxy. And then Griffin Dorsey, Colorado native, is at the back as well. So this is a team that I think played the LA Galaxy really, really tough, Mark, over the weekend. I don't think there's any shame in them losing 2-1, especially when it's Gabriel Peck and Ricky Pooch that are scoring two fantastic goals against the U to ultimately have you lose the game. But you're trying to be a really, really good home team. You're trying to put in a really good performance. And where the Rapids had their way in the midfield in the reverse fixture, because Hector Herrera was not there, this is going to be a very, very tough game and a tough week for the Rapids. Mark, what do we see in Houston? What needs to be better other than just not being Swiss cheese up the middle?
Well, I think Houston's having a rough go of things. I just don't think they've proven to be as talented a team as I think we expected based on their results last year. The most important stat for them is that they had a really great three-game winning streak, and then they just completely fell apart after that. So they racked up points in the month of March with wins over Portland and the Rapids and San Jose, all one-goal wins, by the way. And then since then, they have one win. Two wins since then. But since April 20th, they have just one win, and that's over Sporting Kansas City. And including in that is their Open Cup loss on penalties to Detroit City FC, which was scandalous. Now, granted, they, of course, rested players, but, you know, there was this great argument that, like, the defending U.S. Open Cup champs should probably go further than getting beat by a USL team in the early rounds. But, you know, whatever. They also just lost to Austin, who are really weak this year and have been really struggling. They're bouncing back, but, you know, I just think Houston is ripe for the plucking here. And this is, but they're also in a position where they really want to kind of get back into things. And so, it's a 6-8, you know, mid table battle, as you mentioned, kind of starting off. So, kind of anything can happen here. I think the Rapids have this one. They tend to struggle when they go to Houston. It's humid, it's hot, it's a difficult stadium environment, but it is a midweek game, so you won't have that kind of crowd energy going for you. So you've got that going for you, which is nice. So that's kind of my thoughts on this team. I think you've said it with, in terms of personnel, who's kind of impressive and who's most notable. I don't think any of the players that I've called out in the past when we reviewed this team before have been worthy of mentioning before. Mentioning again. Nobody's been really impressive for this team. Coco Kereskia is the most fun player to watch when he's having a good game. But he's kind of invisible other than that. And Ibrahim Aliyu is a lot of potential that hasn't mostly been realized. So, he has 4 goals on the season, but, that's not that impressive considering how many minutes he has. So I think this is a winnable game for the Rapids. I think they can go into Houston and go thump these guys good. I'm going to say 3-0 on this one for the Rapids. I know that's a bold call, but I feel like coming off of the hot mess of the last couple of weeks with them, they're ready to go in and go kind of demonstrate. Now the question is, will there be some squad rotation here? But I don't know. I don't think so. I think the Rapids will go in, and they do have a really deep roster that they've been playing with for the last couple of weeks. They've got a couple guys like Connor Ronan sitting on the bench waiting to go. They've got Lalas Abubakar, Sebastian Anderson. There's a lot of options that you could go to that are kind of first off the bench guys. I mean, even Darren Yappe, you could throw him up top instead of Kevin Cabral in kind of that. Now, this is another thing I was going to say. Sorry, I forgot to mention this. We were talking about the other match, but the Rapids really, with Cabral and Navajo, were really looking like they were playing with two strikers a lot of the time. So it was like a 4-2-3-1 in defense that kind of morphed into a 4-4-2 in attack, which was really interesting to watch, or maybe even a 4-1-3-2. And so that's something to kind of note, like how are they playing as they develop out of the attack? And will we see more of this? Matt, what are your thoughts on Houston?
Yeah, you know, you've got 3-0 Rapids. I've got 1-0 in this one, Mark. I do think the Rapids can go in, set up a little bit more conservatively, not a flat 4-4-2 against like what they did against NYCFC, but a similar approach of letting the opponent have the ball and then letting you get forward into space. Because Griffin Dorsey is going to come at Sam Vines, and that was a fun battle, one that mostly, compared to other performances that Sam has had recently, it was a matchup that he didn't lose. And what does that leave for Kevin Cabral? A bunch of space in behind against a 34-year-old Hector Herrera. I will absolutely take that. And then you look at Daniel Stairs, who's been playing it right back, you know, kind of a stay-at-home, normally a center back, playing a little bit out of position. So Anomir Fernandez with a step on him, cutting inside. Calvin Harris with his space, especially if he's able to link up with Cole Bassett. I do think squad rotation is going to be really interesting, as you said, Mark. Do we see a Sebastian Anderson in for a Sam Vines or a Keegan Rosenberry? I have to think if Ronan came back and was solid in the second half off of you having a good second half and a bad first half with all of the rosin there, if that performance doesn't get Ollie dropped, and this isn't a knock on Ollie, he's a young player, there was going to be a couple bad performances in a row. He's been fantastic for the most part as a starter. He's exceeded expectations. I would pick up the option for the team option that he has for 2025 right now. And you're taking that and then go spend the Lamine Diak money at another position once Diak's loan expires. Like, Connor Ronan has to start this game, and in particular going up against Hector Herrera, where you want to be a guy who's going to be able to cover space, be calm in a rest defense, and also still be solid on the ball and maybe bring a little bit of physicality when Ollie's kind of shied away from that at times. I think this is a game for Connor Ronan to start, play at least 16 minutes. I think he's got the legs in it. I don't think he then goes plays 90 at Vancouver, but that's another question for another time. And we've seen Armas, for the most part, from his approach from a lineup standpoint, focus on the game in front of him. So not let's plan this as a double game week. Let's look at this as we've got 2 days off of a break to prepare for Houston. And we'll start thinking about what we're doing from a roster standpoint after we get a result against Houston Dynamo. So the squad rotation is a big thing, Mark, that I would agree with you on. I think Ache played 90 minutes against LA Galaxy. He did. And then pretty much everybody in MLS has a double game week. So what do I like more, Mark? The platoon situation of Bassett probably playing, so 3 times 90, if we're talking about this past Saturday's game and the 2 games this week, is 270. I feel confident we can get 240 minutes out of Cole Bassett. I feel confident between Ronan and Ali the Roz that can be 200 plus minutes if we're assuming that Diak isn't relevant in this conversation because he just hasn't even been in the squad, and then maybe Jasper Lofelson getting a sub appearance in one of those 2 games. I like that matchup if Hector Herrera is tired playing 90 minutes or isn't able to go 90 minutes, and then that relieves stuff in the midfield, and then that allows the Rapids to go out and do stuff in transition just like they did against NYCFC and have success, given that Houston's going to want to be on the front foot playing at home. And if they're able to do that and Sam Vines is able to win his 1v1 matchup with Griffin Dorsey and the Rapids aren't Swiss cheese up the midfield, then I think the Rapids are going to be okay and should be able to get a result, even if it's not 3-0 or 1-0. Mark, let's talk about Vancouver. Not a whole lot different things to say about them. They still have Ryan Gauld. He's still decent, although in a little bit of a slump from an assist standpoint, Mark. He does not have an assist since before that game against the Rapids. He just has 2 goals. He scored against Seattle. Not a good defense. He scored against Miami, who were playing a B team, so good for him. And then Brian White, similarly, Mark, not necessarily putting in a lot of goals. Still a decent defense, and certainly I have to thank a Whitecaps team who are playing on Wednesday. They are playing at Sporting Kansas City. So similarly, so you've got, so Vancouver has to go at SKC, the Rapids have to go at Houston and then to Vancouver. But I have to think Vancouver's looking to bounce back, Mark, but I think Vancouver has to think go to SKC and get a win given where SKC is in the table. But, you know, Mark, I'm hesitant to pontificate a lot about this game given that we're podcasting before the Houston match, but I'll say 4 points would be a great success from this week, Mark. I would take 2 points, to be honest with you. Mark, what do we see in Vancouver? How are we thinking about this one differently compared to a couple weeks ago where it was a dull game and the Rapids kind of lucked out because of the officiating?
My take is we are not thinking of this game differently than we were a couple weeks ago. And I'm kind of bummed to see these guys playing us again. I think the other challenge is playing that game in Vancouver is a little bit tougher for the Rapids. I feel they've played, in my memory, they've played some very exciting games in Vancouver. They've played very well there, but I don't know, coming off of a midweek, you know, match in Houston, this is a tough road trip. I also remember a number of years ago, I think, Matt, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but the Rapids had a whole like travel fiasco involving Vancouver. They had some sort of like mechanical problem with the plane, and it wound up meaning that they like, you know, they got in, either got in late or they got out late, and they got
I think it was going to Toronto.
Really?
And they were coming from another road game. They went somewhere. I think they went like to Columbus or to Chicago and then went on to Toronto. You might be right.
I don't know.
Weird things happen when the Rapids travel to Canada.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest challenge for me, of course, with all West Coast games is that it's like 10:30 at night for me, and, you know, I'm exhausted and half asleep. So not ideal for me and my viewing experience. Also, that day is that's the Champions League match earlier. So it's going to be it's always mentally very difficult to transition from high end Champions League soccer, where people lace 40-yard passes at a million miles an hour and it sticks to a guy's foot like he caught it in a glove, and then go from that to seeing Vancouver, Colorado, where it's a little sloppier. The technique isn't quite there. The technical ability is not quite there. So I don't know. I think the Rapids are probably due to get a loss in Vancouver. They're just not likely to travel after midweek so well. So I'll take that as a 2-0 loss for the Rapids.
Yeah, and it's a triple header, Mark, if we're talking about the U.S. Women's National Team game, and Emma Hayes making her debut as the U.S. head coach here in Commerce City against South Korea. So you got Champions League at 1 p.m. Mountain Time, then that leading directly into U.S. Women's National Team. That game gets over at 5, and then put on 360 for the East Coast games, and then transition that into an 8:30 start against Vancouver. I think given the way these teams played, Mark, given how both of these previous games went. So the Rapids game against Houston, where they were the better team but didn't execute, and Houston had one chance and they converted it. And given the Vancouver game, where we were looking for intensity, neither team brought it, and then one team made a mistake that led to a penalty and a red card and a goal all in one, then I look at this and I think I look at the Houston game as being much more tactical given where Houston's at. So I feel like it's the show up to Houston and change some stuff tactically, maybe rotate the squad a little bit and focus on executing, do what you do well and focus on that. And I feel like the Vancouver game is the flip of that, of it's going to be all about intensity going into the international break. You got 2 weeks off. Let's put out a squad there. And if you play with energy, in just like how you didn't do that against Vancouver, they can be had. With Houston, I think you have to play well and you have to have a good game plan given the opponent, given the way that they played, given the way that the last time you played them went, and then also given the humidity and the turnaround. So we'll see if the Rapids can have a good game plan and play within themselves and execute their tactics against Houston, and let's see if they can rely on intensity and mentality and fight and the motivation that Chris Armas will certainly give them regardless of what happens on Wednesday. Can they do that to outwill Vancouver? Can they outskill or can they out game plan Houston? Can they outplay and out hustle Vancouver? And if the Rapids do that, Mark, I think we're possibly looking at a 4-point week, at the very least 3 points. And I think given what's happened recently and given the difficulty of the schedule and given the international break coming up, I think that's something that we'll take here at Holding the High Line, even though the Rapids did not hold the high line against the Minnesota United Loons very well. Mark, shall we get out of here?
Do we have any Ask HEHLs?
Oh, yes, thank you. I wrote it in the rundown and then we skipped it. I apologize. Matthew
Schmiemann. We didn't skip it. I told you, man. I'm on top of it. I'm all over you, baby.
Matthew Schmiemann asks, at Rapids96 Podcast, the past few seasons, who has been statistically the biggest under-the-radar Rapids killer, and who always seems to be able to score against them? Ones that seem to come to mind are Anderson Julio, Real Salt Lake, Amin Bassi, Houston, Hassani Dotson, Minnesota, Corey Baird, a bunch of places, Dairon Asprilla, Portland Timbers. Mark, let's look past the Emmanuel Reynosos and the Demir Krylatches and the Carlos Vellas. Well, Vella's not a good example, at least not in Commerce City. Let's look past the typical Rapids killers. Mark, who are the under-the-radar guys that nobody thinks about that just always seem to show up and ball out against the Rapids for you?
I mean, you stole mine. It was Demir Krylatch. I mean, he was absolutely the one. I mean, I think basically like Pablo Mastroeni as a coach kind of goes into things looking very, very rough. After that, geez, who else does it feel like? I mean, it was interesting, you know, back in the day, like Houston used to play us very physical. And like, I remember Dylan Cerna's ACL injury happened against Houston, and I never forgave them for that. And I feel like there was another Rapids injury either that season or the next season against Houston. And I was like, we can't play Houston anymore. They only cause us pain. So that's more of like a physical thing. Other than that, is there any other team or player that I feel like does us really rotten? I think there's one more is in New England. I think Gustavo Boo is always Bao Boo. I never know how to pronounce
Gustavo
his name.
Gustavo Bo, but he's not with them anymore. So it's,
no, but he was always absolutely like savage to us. But that's like saying, you know, like Messi does us raw. You know, like when you talk about the best players in the league, they're all going to tear you up. But that being said, I mean, you know, I remember in the 2 or 3 years the Rapids played NYCFC, in their first couple of years, David Villa was always a nothing burger against the Rapids. We could always kind of put him in our back pocket and not worry about him.
Who was the wide guy they had that I feel like absolutely torched the Rapids in that game where Azir got sent off? Ishmael Tajiri Shrade, does that
sure.
sound right?
That's, yeah, then he played for LAFC briefly. Yeah, I love that guy. I never understood why they didn't keep him. He kind of floated around the league. I assume that there's something there that I don't know. Talis Magno is another guy that I think beat up on the Rapids in the one or two games that we've played with him, but he's been a little bit quiet since then. So I don't know. We'll see. Ruan. Here's another one. Ruan for Orlando City. He's one of their fullbacks. That dude has absolute ridiculous foot speed, and he would just torch us like to no end. So that's another dude.
Not recently. I would say the Seattle Sounders version of Will Bruin, not the Houston Dynamo version of Will Bruin. He scored. I think he scored in the playoff game here, Mark, or he had a goal. I remember him torching the Rapids in the Western Conference final in 2016. And I remember, I remember because it's been a joke between you and I, Mark, where Will Bruin scores against the Rapids for Seattle. I post that dancing bear gif, and then you comment that I am making that joke again, and I'm therefore like need to get some new material.
Nice.
But I think we're scraping the bottom of the barrel. Matthew, I think you hit the nail on the head with Hassani Dotson and Corey Baird for me. Dairon Asprilla is sneaky good to everybody. Like there's a reason Portland Timbers fans constantly talk about how he's underrated. I feel like Anderson Julio might be a little bit of recency bias just because he scored, you know, he torched Moise Bombito and scored the icing on the cake goal, you know, a few weeks ago against RSL. I don't remember Amin Bassi being particularly good, at least not in the most recent fixture against Houston, and he's a recent acquisition for them. But Dotson, Corey Baird, and Baird's impressive for me because he's done it for multiple teams, because he was at LAFC, he's at Houston, he's at Seattle now, he's done it with RSL. Like Baird has done it for multiple teams against the Rapids. So whereas Krylatch, you can say that his success against Colorado is maybe incubated to the Rocky Mountain Cup specifically, Corey Baird has done that to the Rapids for multiple teams. And while for the most part being a mid striker at best in MLS, so that's proof to me that signal for that's a peak for him where his average is, you know, lower for playing other teams in MLS. I think that'll do it for us, Mark. Shall we get out of here now officially?
Yeah, I was trying to think. Johnny Russell for SKC is one more name. Not just because he does us dirty, but because he is dirty. Like, he is a very physical player. He's a very floppy player, and I hate playing against him. So that's my other last one for this. This is one of my favorite topics, talking about, like, players that drive me mad, and that I respect the hell out of them, and I wish we had them on our team, you know? And Johnny Russell definitely fits into that category.
Daniel Shallowy has done Lucas Estevez dirty, but we don't need to talk about SKC Rapids Fight Club. Listeners, follow us collectively on the socials at @soccer_rabbi, at @LWSmattPollard, at @Rapids96Podcast. We're also on Facebook. We're on Blue Sky. I can't remember if I started a Mastodon account. If we have, we haven't used it in months, obviously, but... Mark's running the Facebook. He's making a lot of jokes on there. Go like us on Facebook for the boomers that listen to us, and you know, you can send us full paragraphs.
Ouch!
Typed in double spaces between your sentences and everything. Send us your hate mail at rapids96podcast@gmail.com. Rate, review, share, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and tell other Rapids and soccer curious friends and family in your life about us. Listeners, we'll see you next week going into the international break, and hopefully recapping two positive results for the Pits.
Peace!
BMO Field, excuse me, at BBVA. I got it wrong again. We're going to edit this.
Rough show for Matt.